A Canticle for Leibowitz.
Alleluia, alleluia.
Part 14 of a series in 15 parts, adapted from a novel by Walter Miller Jr. A Canticle for Leibowitz. Here continues the chronicle, set down daily by the brethren of Isaac Edward Leibowitz, in their abbey in the desert of the Southwest. Quote, "And it came to pass in the year of our Lord 3781 that the city of Texarkana was destroyed by mighty engines of battle. Whereat many did fear that much war would ensue, even unto all nations, and would make an end to the earth. Nor was there only fear, but also great sickness. For the death which laid waste to Texarkana was borne beyond on the winds of heaven, making mortally ill many whom it touched. And of these doomed persons many came to our abbey, for it was not far distant. And there came likewise a mission of mercy to tend them. This mission served under the banner of the Green Star. And with this mission a doctor of medicine. And this physician did seek out Abbot Jethro Zerke, to ask his leave that they might tend the sick in our courtyard. This tending was to be of two kinds. All those not mortally sick would be given skilled care. But those certain to die would be given leave to die forthwith, without further pain, by means of a fatal draught. And this fashion of dying was by civil law lawful." Unquote.
So said the doctor, Dr. Kors, who'd come to Abbot Zerke's office. Zerke, hands on hips, stared at him, eyes blazing.
"Due process, they call it. Due process of mass state-sponsored suicide with all of society's blessings."
"Well, it's certainly better than letting him die horribly by degrees."
"Is it, Dr. Kors, better for whom? The street cleaners? Better to have your living corpses walk to a central disposal station while they can still walk? Less public spectacle? A few million corpses lying around might start a rebellion against those responsible. And that's what you and the government mean by better, isn't it?"
"I wouldn't know about the government. What I meant by better was more merciful. I have no intention of arguing theology with you. If you think you have a soul that God would send to hell if you chose to die painlessly instead of horribly, then go ahead and think so."
"Forgive me. I wasn't getting ready to argue theology with you. I was speaking only of this spectacle of mass euthanasia in terms of human motivation. The very existence of the Radiation Disaster Act and like laws in other countries is the plainest possible evidence that governments were fully aware of the consequences of another war. Are the implications of the fact meaningless to you, Doctor?"
"Of course not. But for the present, we're stuck with the world as it is. And if they couldn't agree on a way to make an act of war impossible, then it's better to have some provision for coping with the consequences than to have no provision."
"Yes and no. Yes, if it's in anticipation of somebody else's crime. No, if it's in anticipation of one's own. And especially no if the provisions to soften the consequences are criminal, too."
"Like euthanasia?"
"Yes."
"Oh, I'm sorry, Father. I feel the laws of society are what make something a crime or not a crime. And there can be bad laws, ill-conceived, true. But in this case, I think we have a good law. If I thought I had such a thing as a soul, and there was an angry God in heaven, I might agree with you."
"You don't have a soul, Doctor. You are a soul. You have a body, temporarily."
"A semantic confusion."
"True, but which of us is confused? And are you sure?"
"Let's not quarrel, Father. I'm not with the Mercy Cadre. I work on the exposure survey team. We don't kill anybody. We have two mobile units. We can bring them into your courtyard and start right to work. We'll take the obvious radiation cases and the wounded first. We treat only the most urgent cases. Our job's clinical testing. The sick ones get treatment at an emergency camp."
"Yes, and the sickest ones get something else at a mercy camp?"
"Only if they want to go. Nobody makes them go."
"But you write out the permit that lets them go."
I've given some red tickets, yes. I may have to this time. Here, this is one. Read it. Tells the man he's sick, very sick. Estimated exposure in radiation units, blood count, urinalysis, and the fine print. It's directly quoted from public law 10WR3E. It has to be there. The law requires it. It has to be read to him. He has to be told his rights. But what he does about it is his own affair. Now, if you'd rather we park the mobile units down the highway, we
You just read it to him, do you? Nothing else.
What? It has to be explained to him if he doesn't understand it. Good Lord, Father, when you tell a man he's a hopeless case, what are you going to say? Read him a few paragraphs of the law, show him the door, and say, next, please, you're going to die, so good day? Of course you don't read him that, nothing else. Not if you have any human feeling at all.
I understand that. What I want to know is something else. Do you, as a physician, advise hopeless cases to go to a mercy camp?
Of course I do. If you'd seen what I'd seen, you would too. Of course I do.
You'll not do it here.
All right. Down the highway, the roadside park. We can set up there. But it's 2 miles. Most of them will have to walk. They're sick, hurt, fractured, frightened. Children, too. You'd let them be herded off down the highway and sit in the dust and the sun?
I don't want it to be that way. Look, you were just telling me how a man-made law required you to read and explain this to a critical radiation case. I offered no objection to that in itself. Render unto Caesar to that extent, since the law demands it of you. Can you not then understand that I am subject to another law, that it forbids me to allow you or anyone else on this property, under my rule, to counsel anyone to do what the church calls evil?
Oh. I understand well enough.
Okay. You need only make me one promise, and you may use the courtyard.
What promise?
Simply that you won't advise anyone to go to a mercy camp. Limit yourself to diagnosis. If you find hopeless radiation cases, tell them what the law forces you to tell them. But don't tell them to go kill themselves.
I think it would be proper to make such a promise with respect to patients who belong to your faith.
I'm sorry, but that is not enough.
Why? Others are not bound by your principles. If a man is not of your religion, why should you refuse to allow him...
Do you want an explanation?
Yes.
Because if a man is ignorant of the fact that something is wrong and acts in ignorance, he incurs no guilt. But while ignorance may excuse the man, it does not excuse the act, which is wrong in itself. If I permitted the act simply because the man is ignorant that it is wrong, then I would incur guilt, because I do know it to be wrong. It is really that painfully simple.
Painfully simple. Listen, Father, they sit there and they look at you. Some scream. Some cry. All of them say, Doctor, what can I do? And what am I supposed to answer? Say nothing? Say you can die and that's all? What would you say?
Pray.
Yes, you would.
Yes, I would.
Listen, pain is the only evil I know about. It's the only one I can fight.
Then God help you.
Antibiotics help me more.
Dr. Kors, you want to use the courtyard? Just promise not to recommend euthanasia to any patient while you're there.
And if I refuse?
Then I suppose they'll have to drag themselves 2 miles down the road.
Of all the merciless...
On the contrary, I'm offering you an opportunity to do your work as required by the law you recognize without overstepping the law I recognize. Whether they go down the road or not is up to you.
All right. I promise.
Do you keep promises, Dr. Kors?
The mobile station was set up in the courtyard right away. Zirke thought about the promise Kors had made. Worthless, perhaps. But still, the man was sincere, seeing misery everywhere and detesting it, and sincere in wanting to do something about it. Sincere, that was the hell of it. From a distance, one's adversaries seemed fiends. But with a closer view, one saw the sincerity, and it was as great as one's own. Perhaps Satan was the sincerest of all. Brother Pat brought him a message. The message informed him that Brother Joshua and the others had departed from New Rome for an unspecified destination in the West. The message also advised him that information had leaked to Zone Defense Interior, who'd asked questions about the rumored launching of an unauthorized starship. The legal situation was tangled, but evidently the starship was not yet in space. Zirke prayed that the group would get away without a test in the courts, which might take weeks or months. He suddenly realized His thinking had changed during the previous day or two. A few days ago, everyone had been waiting for the sky to burst asunder. But 9 days had passed since Lucifer had prevailed in space and scorched a city out of existence. Despite the dead, the maimed, and the dying, there had been 9 days of silence. Since the wrath had been stayed thus far, perhaps the worst could be averted. He'd found himself thinking of things that might happen next week or next month, as if, after all, there might really be a next week or a next month. The refugees were noisy in the courtyard. The quiet of the old abbey was shattered by strange sounds. The boisterous laughter of men telling jokes, the cry of a child, the rattle of pots and pans, hysterical sobbing, a medic shouting. After bearing it as long as he could, Zerky picked up a pair of binoculars and climbed the stairs to one of the old watchtowers where a thick stone wall cut off most of the sounds from the courtyard. From the tower, he could see the highway. Centuries old. The highway was the same road used by pilgrims, donkey carts, wild horsemen out of the east, artillery, tanks, and 10-ton trucks. Its traffic had gushed or trickled, according to the age and season. Now, there were 6 lanes and robot traffic. Earlier, a monk had returned from an errand in the city and had reported that Green Star was setting up another refugee camp at the park 2 miles down the highway. With the binoculars, he could see tents being pitched. There was a big red engine of some sort. It seemed to have a firebox and something like a boiler. At least 12 trucks were parked on the side road. One seemed to be hauling bricks. Another was burdened with pottery and straw. It was a load of urns or vases, all alike, packed together with cushioning wads of straw. Recognition came to him. Once he'd driven past a crematorium and seen men unloading a truck. He swung the binoculars again, searching for the great red engine. What had at first glance appeared to be a boiler now suggested an oven. Or a furnace. Late that evening, Dr. Kors came looking for the abbot. The physician looked haggard, unnerved.
I just broke my promise.
Proud of it?
Not especially. We'll leave at once, of course. I just thought I'd tell you.
Wait a minute. You'll tell me the rest.
Will I? Why? So you can go threaten hellfire? She's sick enough now, and so is the child. I'll tell you nothing.
You already have. I know who you mean.
Radiation sickness. Uncontrollable vomiting. Flash burns. The woman has a broken hip. The father's dead. The fillings in the woman's teeth are radioactive. The child almost glows in the dark. And I can't do anything for them except the euthanasia unit.
I've seen them.
Then you know why I broke the promise.
What did you tell her?
If you love your child, spare her the agony. Go to sleep mercifully as quick as you can.
So, we'll leave.
Zerky found the woman lying on a cot with the child. They were huddled together under a blanket. Both were crying. The courtyard smelled of death and antiseptic.
Father?
Yes?
We're done for. See? See what they gave me? A red ticket?
Yes, I know. You know what this is?
It's a rosary.
It's for you. Keep it. Use it.
Thank you.
Bear it and pray.
I know what I have to do.
Don't be an accomplice, for the love of God, child, don't.
The doctor said that
don't be an accomplice. Don't.
The woman was silent. The next day, with errands in the city, he ordered a car, climbed in, dialed its destination, and sank back wearily while the automatic controls engaged the gears and nosed the car toward the gate. In passing the gate, he saw the woman standing at the roadside, the child with her. He jabbed at the cancel button. The car stopped.
What are you doing out of bed, child? You're not supposed to be up, not with that hip. Where do you think you're going?
To town. I've got to go. It's urgent.
Not so urgent that somebody couldn't do it for you.
No, nobody else can do it for me. I've got to get down.
All right, then, I'll take you to town. I'm driving in anyway.
No, I'll walk.
You can't walk to town, child. Come on now, let's get you back to bed.
I've got to get to town, I tell you.
All right, then, get in the car. I'll take you to town.
The car waited for a break in the traffic, then swerved onto the highway. 2 minutes later, as they approached the Green Star Mercy Camp, he dialed a slower speed to have a look. The woman put her hand on the door handle. She was eyeing the car's controls. Zerke quickly punched up fast lane. The car shot ahead again. She took her hand from the door.
Oh.
Are you in pain, daughter?
It doesn't matter.
Offer it to heaven, child.
You think it would please God?
If you offer it, yes.
I cannot understand a God who is pleased by my baby's pain.
No, no, it's not the pain that is pleasing to God, child. It's the soul's endurance.
Save your breath, Father. I'm not complaining. My baby is. But she doesn't understand your sermon. She can hurt, though. Oh, she can hurt. She can't understand.
Don't do it, daughter. Just don't do it.
I'll think about it.
I had a cat once when I was a boy. He was a big gray tomcat with that sort of slouchy insolence that makes some of them look like the devil's own. He was pure cat. Do you know cats?
A little.
Cat lovers don't know cats. You can't love all cats if you know cats. The ones you can love, if you know them, are the ones that cat lovers don't even like. Zeke was that kind of cat.
This has a moral, of course.
Only that I killed him.
Stop! Whatever you are about to say, stop!
A truck hit him, crushed his back legs. He dragged himself under the house. Once in a while, he'd make a noise, like a cat fight, thrash around a little, but mostly he just lay quietly and waited. He ought to be destroyed, they kept telling me. After a few hours, he dragged himself from under the house, crying for help. He ought to be destroyed, they said. I wouldn't let them do it. They said it was cruel to let him live. So finally I said I'd do it myself if it had to be done. I got a gun and a shovel, and I took him out to the edge of the woods. I stretched him out on the ground while he dug a hole. Then I shot him through the head. It was a small bore rifle. Zeke thrashed a couple of times. He got up. He started dragging himself toward some bushes. I shot him again. It knocked him flat, so I thought he was dead. And I put him in the hole. After a couple of shovels of dirt, Zeke got up and he pulled himself out of the hole and he started for the bushes again. I was crying louder than the cat. I had to kill him with a shovel, and while I was chopping with it, Zeke was still thrashing around. They told me later it was just reflex, but I didn't believe it. I knew that cat. He wanted to get to those bushes and just lie there and wait. I wish to God that I had only let him get to those bushes and die the way a cat would if you just let it alone, with dignity. I never felt right about it. Zeke was only a cat, but...
Shut up!
But even the ancient pagans noticed nature imposes nothing on you that nature doesn't prepare you to bear. If that is true, even of a cat, Then is it not more perfectly true of a creature with a rational intellect and will, whatever you may believe of heaven?
Shut up, damn you! Shut up!
They drove into the city. Zerke stopped to post a letter, stopped at St. Michael's to speak with Father Cello, stopped again at the Zone Defense Interior Office. Each time he returned to the car, he half expected the woman to be gone. But she sat quietly, holding the baby.
Are you going to tell me where you wanted to go, child?
Nowhere. I've changed my mind.
Good. Then we'll go back home.
On the way back, as they approached the Mercy Camp, a police officer stepped out ahead of them and pointed his traffic baton at the vehicle's obstruction detectors. The autopilot reacted automatically and brought the car to a stop. The policeman came up to the car and stared at the red tickets still hanging at the throats of the woman and the child.
Oh, afternoon, Father. You from the Abbey up there?
Yes, I am, officer, and this woman and baby are staying there as well.
Is that right, ma'am?
I'm getting out of here.
No, I forbid you.
Hey, what's going on here? Where do you get off forbidding a lady to get out?
The baby. Let me take the baby, please.
Is that your kid, lady?
She's mine.
He, holding you prisoner or something?
No.
What do you want to do, ma'am? It's up to you.
Stay in the car.
Ma'am, what do you say?
We're both getting out here.
No!
Hey! You want to face a charge? All right, ma'am. You and the kid, you can get out now. I'll get somebody to help you. Of course! Hey, Doc!
Yes?
Come over here a minute, will you?
Yes, what is it?
Can you see to this woman and her baby while I take care of this nut in here?
Sure. Nurse, take this child to tent 3 and give the mother a hand.
Am I under arrest?
I'm thinking about it.
Any particular charge?
How about attempted kidnap?
Listen, Father, I know how you feel about all this.
You!
Zerke's fist shot out of the window and into the doctor's face. It caught Kors off balance, and he sat down hard on the road.
Hey, all right, you get out of there. Now, stay there. One move and I lock you up.
The policeman pulled the priest out of the driver's seat and pushed him hard against the side of the car. The officer went to talk with the doctor. Thoroughly ashamed, Zerke pressed his forehead against the metal of the car and tried to pray. It mattered little to him at the moment what they might decide to do.
What am I doing?
He could think only of the woman and the child. He was certain she'd been ready to change her mind, if only they'd not forced him to stop here.
All right, Father, you're a lucky nut, I'll say that.
What?
Dr. Kors refuses to file a complaint. He says he had one coming. What's your job up there at the Abbey?
I am the abbot.
Ah, the head guy, huh?
Yes, officer.
That give you a license to commit common assault?
I'm sorry. If Dr. Kors will hear me, I'll apologize.
Yeah. Listen, let's just forget the whole thing. Only you stay away from this place, you hear?
Yes.
All right, get moving. But if you so much as drive past there and spit, that'll be it.
Yes.
Alone with his shame, Zerke drove back to the Abbey, where he sought out the prior, his confessor.
I believe you've been warned about that temper before.
Yes, Father.
You realize the intent was relatively murderous?
There was no intent to kill.
Are you trying to excuse yourself?
No, Father. The intent was to hurt. I accuse myself of violating the spirit of the fifth commandment in thought and deed, and of sinning against justice and charity, and bringing disgrace and scandal on my office.
You realize you've broken a promise never to resort to violence?
Yes, Father. I deeply regret it.
And the only mitigating circumstance is that you just saw red and swung. Do you often let yourself abandon reason like that?
Elsewhere as well, reason had been abandoned. A weird and brooding silence from both capitals. A kind of numb fury. Both at battle alert.